Welcome to Brand New, a Bible teaching ministry brought to you by Crossroads Community Church in Vancouver, Washington. I'm Ron Hagelgans. Great to have you along today as our teacher, Pastor Bill Ritchie, begins a series called Dying to Live. Easter will be here in just a couple of weeks, and to give us a better understanding of the joy that we experience on that day, we're going to take a break from our current series for a while and focus on the last days of Jesus on this earth. And we start by realizing that as Jesus moved toward death, he gave off the scent of life. Matthew chapter 26 is the place to be in your Bible as we join Pastor Bill for today's lesson recorded live at Crossroads Community Church. Here's Pastor Bill.
Scents, fragrances, they can be a big deal. Have you ever thought about the fact that Jesus carries a fragrance? I mean, it's reality, and those who love him, those who choose to follow him, the Bible tells us, carry the same fragrance. If you were to look at 2 Corinthians, in 2 Corinthians 2, I believe it is, it says, "For we are to God the fragrance of Christ." Isn't that something? Believers, we are, us, you, me, we are to God the fragrance of Christ. Wow. So what does he smell like? I'll tell you what he smells like. He smells like life. That's what he smells like. And those who follow after him, those who love him, those who choose to walk with him, smell like life too. It's all over them. We are now in Easter season. We're moving toward Easter so that we might be able to really know why we pull out the stops on Easter Sunday morning. It seemed good to me for us to spend a little bit of time just getting our heads into the reality of what Jesus went through to gain life for you and me. And so we are going to do that by means of looking at three chapters of the book of Matthew. Matthew 26, Matthew 27, and Matthew 28. And if you want to turn with me now to Matthew 26, it should be on 877 if you're using that Bible in front of you. We're going to begin with Matthew 26, the first part of it. And I think that what you're going to see here is that the closer Jesus moves toward death, the greater he gives off the scent of life. And so for you and me, it's all about carrying that fragrance of life. Matthew 26. It says, "Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these sayings that he said to his disciples, 'You know that after 2 days is the Passover, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified.' Then the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled at the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. But they said, 'Not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people.'" Okay, as Matthew 26 opens here, we find ourselves face to face with the most critical question. And that is, what is our focus? Life or death? When you think about yourself, when you think about your personal focus, what is your focus day to day? Is it truly on life or is it truly on death? What scent do we want to carry? To me, it has always seemed amazing that as Jesus moved toward his death, he was only and ever focused on life. Death was not the end. Death was not the answer. It was all about life. And while you would think that his sense of life would be ebbing the closer he was getting to death, it actually is just the reverse. It's like this sense of life becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. You know, he had made a resolution, a resolve in himself about that long before. I have always loved a line that you find in the 9th chapter of the book of Luke, when Jesus was up in Caesarea Philippi sometime before this. And it says, "Now it came to pass, when the time had come for him to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem." He steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. He resolved that what would happen on Good Friday and what would happen in Easter, he resolved that that was in fact going to take place. And no thing nor no one would get in the way of that. It wouldn't happen. Now we know immediately, even in that very instance, there were all sorts of distractions, ways to try to dissuade him, to move him off course, so that in fact he would not end up where he had determined to go. I mean, right there in Caesarea Philippi, you know, that's the place that where Peter made that great announcement, proclamation of faith, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jona," Jesus says to him, "for flesh and blood have not revealed this to you," and so on. Great confession of faith. And Jesus then revealed to them what was going to happen. "Guys, you know, let me just share with you what's going to go down here. You know, you're feeling good about this right now, but let's have a little reality check here." And what happens? Immediately, Peter steps forward, all this bravado. "No, it'll never happen to you, you know. Count on us. We'll be there for you," and so forth. For me, I'd be thinking, "That's good. I'm so glad my buds are here, you know. They're not going to let this stuff happen," and all the rest. But that wasn't where Jesus was. "Get behind me, Satan. You're an offense to me. You're a stumbling block to me. For you're not mindful of the things of God, but of things of man." He steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. Nothing was going to get in the way. He moves out of that to go straight. If you've been in Israel, you know the kind of outlay. It's a very small country. And if you're going to go straight down from Caesarea Philippi to get to Jerusalem, the straightest way is just to go right through Samaria, to go through Shechem and all of that, to go right through Samaria and then up to Jerusalem. But the Samaritans blocked him at the border. Said it's not happening. I mean, here he doesn't get, you know, any steps on his journey, and already he's being stopped. But it didn't change anything for him. He knew where he was going, and he was going to get there. He was about to gain the means of life for you and for me. But it would only happen through death. You know, this is what real resolve looks like. This is what a real commitment to life looks like. I'm going after this no matter what. I think it's easy for all of us, at least speaking for myself, it's easy for me to look at Jesus and say, "Wow, you know, that's great. Good for you, and I'm with you, man, and I love your resolve." But I got to tell you, I have found it exceedingly difficult to keep that focus, to keep that lock on like that. You know what I'm talking about? Just in the day-to-day stuff that goes on in life, it's just tough. When I was 17 years old, I became a Christian, and the Lord called me to do what I'm doing right now, to be a pastor. I knew that, no question about it. I mean, he might as well have written it on the sky, you know, in the sky, and I could look up and see it, clear as could be. I knew what I was to do with my life. And I did all the stuff that in my background you were supposed to do, went through college, went through seminary, did all that stuff, and began to pastor my first church on my own. And it took me two full months before I said, "That's it, tilt, I'm out of here. I'm doing something else. I'm going to be a lawyer." I applied to law school, decided to go to law school. "I'll be a teacher." I did become a professor at a university. "But I'm not going to do this anymore." Why is that? Well, I could give you a million reasons why I didn't want to do that. 2 months! It took me a whole 2 months to fall apart. I mean, my resolve lasted for a full 2 months. That is just pathetic. And I would like to have thought that I was a whole lot more resilient than that. But I wasn't. Lord, this is just lousy. These people are just griping about everything, and you know, and who needs this? I don't need this. You know, it was like the Lord said to me, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's not about you. I called you to be a pastor. I didn't call you to just have an easy way to go through life. And then I get this postcard from a friend, totally out of nowhere, didn't know anything was going on. Tiny little postcard, and all he said was, whoever said it was going to be easy, love, stew. I hate stew. That's not true. I wrote him back and said, don't do this to me. You can't do this to me. See, Jesus has that kind of resolve that he wants us to carry in our own lives, to lock on to him. And that's what we see in his life as he moves steadfastly toward giving his life for us. By the time he got to the point we're looking at here, in Matthew 26, we're talking about Wednesday of Easter week here. So, you know, you're a few hours away from his death, a few hours away from all of the horrible things that were going to happen. And yet his resolve was as strong as it had ever been. You might even be able to say that his resolve was stronger than it had been. And so now he's preparing his disciples for what they are going to have to face. They are going to have to go through water that is just as deep as he was going to be going through. And so not only was he not backing down in what was awaiting him, he wanted to prepare them for what was awaiting them so that they'd be ready to go through all of those things. See, for the foreseeable future, they'd have to endure a whole lot more than they would enjoy. Life wasn't going to be fun for them. Quite the reverse. In many situations, it was going to be downright difficult. There's a huge difference, you know, between endurance and enjoyment. I think that most of us are much more interested in enjoyment than we are in endurance. Is that not accurate? And in fact, I think for most of us, that's one of the reasons we sort of sign up for God in the first place. Aren't you supposed to help me enjoy this mess? Aren't you supposed to help me to deal with these situations I face? Aren't you supposed to somehow bring a truckload of cash onto my front lawn? Aren't you supposed to give me a great job and a wonderful spouse and a fabulous future and all this kind of stuff? I mean, that's what we're thinking. We're thinking enjoyment. But God's looking for endurance as he wants to build us up in him. There's a fabulous statement that we find in the book of Hebrews. You might just look at that for a second. In Hebrews 12, it says, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us, and let us run the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. For the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. You understand, enjoyment demanded endurance. For the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You've not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. See, enjoyment of life demands endurance of death, of the difficulty. You know, are we really into life or are we acquiescing to death? Will we endure the difficulties? Will we do warfare against the evil one? Will we sidestep the snares that get in our way? Will we resist the temptation so that we might enjoy the lives the Lord had for us? Or will we rather just kind of sink into that stuff? You know, you get a great picture of how the enemy works when you realize what was going on behind the scenes. Here Jesus is preparing his guys for life, for real life, for eternal life, for life to the max here and now, as well as in eternity with God. Here he's preparing them for life at the same time that the religious leadership is plotting his death. I mean, these two things are happening on parallel tracks. Look at those verses, 1 through 5 there. They're happening at the very same time. As he's building up his guys, the religious leadership is over here plotting his demise. How can we kill him? When can we take him out? What is it going to demand that we are able to do in order to make this happen? Absolutely amazing when you see whose fingerprints were all over this. You know, we could say, these guys were just in the flesh and all the rest. Truth of the matter is, the thief comes to steal and kill and destroy, and they're just kind of carrying out his bidding. They just get sucked into this process and don't even understand why they're doing what they're doing. It seems to me that just like with Jesus, the more you want to live for the Lord, the more the enemy wants to distract you, the more he wants to disrupt your life, the more he wants to derail the things that you are doing. It's just going to work that way. And we aren't helping ourselves if we don't understand that. Yeah, I could paint some great picture for you and tell you you can be inordinately successful and have everything you want and all the rest. But you know what? They're just difficult times in life. It's just the reality. And it's because you love the Lord. There are enough things, difficult things that happen just because you're alive. But when you love the Lord, those things just get ramped up. They just get intensified. And he wanted his guys to be under no illusions about that. And so the question is the focus. Are we into life or are we into death? What is the fragrance that we want to carry? Do we want to carry the fragrance of life or do we want to carry the fragrance of death? If you've decided to follow Jesus, there's only one answer to that. Well, we go on. And it says, when Jesus was in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him having an alabaster flask of very costly fragrant oil, and she poured it on his head as he sat at the table. When his disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? This fragrant oil might have been sold for much and given to the poor." But when Jesus was aware of it, he said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? She's done a good work for me. You have the poor with you always. Me, you don't have always. For in pouring this fragrant oil on my body, she did it for my burial. Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her." As we move on in the story, we face another question, and that is, what's our focus? The spirit or the flesh? The spirit or the flesh? The spirit brings life. The flesh brings death. So what is our focus? In 2 Corinthians 3, Paul makes a most intriguing statement. He says, "For the letter kills, but the spirit gives life." The letter, law, legalism, the flesh kills, but the spirit gives life. You know, if there's anything that any of us can relate to, it is the law. We can relate to condemnation. We can relate to judgment. We can relate to anything having to do with that. I mean, we don't want to relate to it if it has to do with us, but we sure find it easy to relate to when it has to do with somebody else. Judging them or condemning them or what are the rest. And the question is, what is the fragrance that we carry when we're in the process of that? You know, when you consider Mary's story here, you find a woman who was completely focused on the Spirit, on life. And at the same time, with the disciples, you see the reverse. Those who were not focused on the Spirit, who were totally caught up in the flesh. And it's interesting to see the only one that Jesus said, "This is right." This is what you want to go after. This carries the fragrance of life with it, and it has to do with a life that is totally caught up in the Spirit. You know, Mary had experienced such grace from God that she couldn't do anything other than bless him, love him, honor him, do whatever she could to him to be able to say thank you. Her heart was overwhelming with gratitude. In Luke 7, talking about the situation, it says that the person who has been forgiven much loves much. They understand what it means to love. Why, when I became a Christian, did I not find it difficult to love the Lord? Why didn't I find it difficult to want to go after the Lord and serve the Lord, however I knew how to do that in a teenage way? I didn't find it hard because I knew that he accepted me as me. With all of the idiosyncrasies of my life up to that point, when you've been forgiven by the Lord, you just tend to want to love him and want to just do whatever you can in your life to say thanks. And that's exactly where she was in her life. She had been forgiven apparently for a whole lot of stuff. There are all kinds of conjecture out there as to what that was, but to me it doesn't make any difference. The heart of it is that she was forgiven for stuff, and she was just thankful for that reality. And it was as if she was just waiting for the right opportunity to be able to state that publicly. It wasn't enough just to walk up and say, hey, by the way, thanks. Really appreciate that. She wanted to just shout this, to say, I owe this man my life, everything. He set me free. And so here the occasion presents itself, and she doesn't care who's looking. She doesn't care what they think. Couldn't care less. She is so caught up in her desire to say thank you, so caught up being moved by the Spirit that she did what she did. Just went in there, took that alabaster vial of ointment, broke it over his head, anointed him. Absolutely amazing. What's funny to me is, here she takes what she has and blesses the Lord, and what do the disciples do? They've done nothing for him, and all they can do is judge her. Gripe about her. Who in the world do you think she is? Look at that. She could have gone and sold this stuff and given all that money, and I'm good night. What? I mean, the difference between the Spirit and the flesh is just staggering. In terms of the scent that it gives off. One gives off life, one gives off death. Which one you giving off? In Mary, we see somebody who is totally caught up in the Spirit. She could have been paralyzed by her past. She could have said, it's over, my life is such a mess, there's nothing I can do. Far from it. She was like she's a racehorse that's just bang, the gates have opened and she's just out there moving as fast as she can to bless the Lord, to honor the Lord.
You've been listening to Pastor Bill Ritchie with part one of his series Dying to Live here on Brand New. This is going to be a terrific series that will take us right through Easter weekend, and I hope you won't miss a single broadcast. I also want you to know that we've put the complete study onto 6 CDs for just $17.95, and we also have a 6 DVD set available for just $29.95. MP3s are available too, and to get your copy rolling in any format, just give us a call at 1-800-817-7708. That's 800-817-7708. Or you can send us an email anytime. Use bn@crossroadschurch.net. And your letter will find us at Brand New, 7708 Northeast 78th Street, Vancouver, Washington, 98662. And did you know you can watch our services live online? Yep, you can watch Pastor Bill every Sunday morning anywhere you can plug into the net. Just go to crossroadschurch.net and click on the little TV. Of course, it would be even better if you could join us here at Crossroads yourself. If you've never heard Pastor Bill in person, you're missing a real treat. There are ministries for everyone in your family, so come see us this Sunday morning. And if you don't have a church home of your own, come and stay. Get easy directions, service times, and all the info you need online anytime at crossroadschurch.net. That's crossroadschurch.net. Or call us in Vancouver at 360-256-9711. I'm Ron Hagel again. It's great to have you with us. And finally, ever wonder why Judas betrayed Jesus? Well, tomorrow, Pastor Bill, we'll talk a lot about Judas and what really happened. So make a note right now so you don't forget, and be right here again tomorrow for more of this great Easter series, Dying to Live, with our teacher, Pastor Bill Ritchie, here on Brand New.